Now, the first thing I want to ask you is a couple of things about the manuscript itself. Okay, so, you know, anything that you remember about its history, in other words, about who translated it. Now, I think in the beginning it says there's a note from Esther to Frank, but I'm not sure about that.
She did the translating.
She did the translating.
Oh, sorry, no, I think Esther did the... No, wait a minute. The translating, you mean from what, from Yiddish to English?
Yeah.
I always had a feeling they were together, Esther and my father.
Mm-hmm.
And they translated it, but maybe one... No, I think Esther... Well, maybe my brother Frank, too. That I can't say.
Okay.
I know I had no part in it.
Okay. Do you remember about when it was translated?
Didn't he give any hints there?
No, it's not. Well, there is a date. There is a date on the note, but when in other words, when your father finished transcribing it or whatever.
He was poor. I mean, in fact, we found some paper here. He speaks about a few dollars where he got it from. No note.
Uh-huh.
It was sort of a. He mentions that the only date he gave is when he was born.
Right.
You got that.
Yeah, in 1860.
Yeah. I think this paper that I have is in Yiddish, and your mother found it in one of the paper bundles that I gave her.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Is that right? So she found that. She thought, oh gosh, you got to find it. Probably find 18 other relatives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a few amounts that he had collected and had and sort of... That's the family note. Not too much, but nevertheless, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing there. Now, what else were you thinking about?
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's see how far we can go back.
Right.
First of all, do you remember him ever saying anything about his father?
Well, very small incidents.
Such
his father became or was a very religious man because of their poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a few incidents. Which did he mention there? One, the sardine can, did he mention that?
Yeah.
That they used as a salt cell.
And he talked about the Megillah and the cold.
Where he folded and pushed it in.
Right.
Of course, that I remember. And I have a few things that I remember.
Sure.
I'm not talking.
No, it's fine. I'll hang on to it.
Oh, you mean
you want
no,
if you
I
want
can
to
hold it. Wait till I get the right place here.
That's all right.
Does he mention about that cigarette incident in his mother's house where he came? He was in the army, and he was home visiting my mother, who was in Grodno.
Right.
And he was packing his trunk. You don't know about that?
No, I don't think that's in the book.
Well, then I'll tell you the story. We have it twice. He was in the army, in the Russian army, Russia had, I suppose, control of Poland then. And he came home once, and of course you can't be very religious in the army, from the Jewish point of view. You have to eat food that's not kosher and all that, and you learn to smoke on Saturday. So he came home, and he was packing his trunk, and a cigarette in his mouth on a Saturday. If the old man comes in, he opens the door. He says, I smell smoke. So we saw that would be the end of the match. That's a worse crime, smoking on a Saturday. Oh, my. So, however, and the old man caught him. So what he did, he knew it would be terrible if he found him. So he quickly dropped the cigarette from his lips without touching it and smothered it with the clothes. The old man comes in right to the trunk that he had, and he said, smoke? I smell smoke. The old man, father, said, no, not me. He looked perplexed. He smelled smoke. He smelled at the door when he came in. He smelled it. But it was all covered.
Uh-huh.
If that hadn't happened, you probably wouldn't be here. That's the worst.
No, this was with...
when he was in the army.
Yeah, but this was at his parents-in-law's house.
That's right.
Right. So that was Dora's.
That's right. Dora.
Your mother's
house.
Parents.
And he is age. He was in the army then. So.
Do you know what his name was? That's your father's father-in-law.
Sure. Ponemonsky.
Ponemonsky, his first name?
P-O-N. First name, I don't know. I don't know the mother's first name.
Okay. How about his father?
Whose father? My father.
Your grandfather.
You got his name?
I think it's Ephraim.
Probably.
Ephraim Trusiansky.
Could be because
he's
my
Moshe
name,
Ephraimovich,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you remember him ever mentioning anything about him?
About his father?
Yeah.
Well, a few incidents. The one about the sardine can he had.
Mm-hmm.
They used that as a salt cellar. My God, when that was lost, you can imagine how poor they were. They didn't even have a salt cellar, just an empty sardine can somebody pulled in. And when that couldn't be found, salt, how can you live without salt? So, however, that you had, let's see, the cigarette incident, all right. Now, you know, I have the other woman here. See, he really liked another woman, shows you. Again, we wouldn't be here. But the economic situation is so bad with them that I suppose he got a dowry, and that turned it the other way.
Hmm.
So look how lucky we are that he wanted money. But however, you can understand it was the need for money was so bad that you had to take that in consideration, anything you did. So however, I think that's mentioned, though.
Yeah, it does mention.
He mentioned something about...
Only could afford 500 rubles.
Oh, it says, you boys to... Oh, now, does he mention there the story about doing a favor for a neighbor? Well, I'll tell you the story, and then you can see. A neighbor sent him, as a kid, to go and get some rolls for him in the bakery. That must mean that he was rich to get white rolls because that was considered the best. So he did, and here you tip him and make a little dime, but there he gave him a blessing instead. So he said, young fellow, I'm blessing you. When you grow up, you should be able to afford white rolls too. He didn't hear that story.
Well,
however, pick out the best one.
Uh-huh.
So he went to tell his father what happened. So he said, for so-and-so, I went and got him some white rolls, and he blessed me. He said, he blessed me, he wished that when I grow up, I'll have white rolls too. So the father gave him a slap. He said, don't you ever in this house tell me what we're going to have. If God wants it, we'll get it, period. So see, that shows a man had to turn to religion, or whether he was religious even without that. But poverty, they were poor. They at times, I think he told me, they bought what they call, the Jewish way, is gebettelte Brot, begged bread. And the way you buy that, there are very poor people who never have any bread, and they go around, get the end pieces or yesterday's old pieces, and they go and sell it. Mm-hmm. So they even, did he mention about?
Yeah.
So he mentioned, all right, then you have that. Let's see. The McGill he mentions in there.
Like, you can tell me anything that you remember, because
well,
sometimes the stories are,
yeah.
You know, there's a little bit more
well,
in one version.
Well, I remember
so.
He told about Megilla that you really went back, according to my father, almost for five or six generations. I don't know, a long time. Came from father to son, et cetera, et cetera. And you have it now. He mentioned once how many generations, I forget how long. However, and that was considered something that kids don't play with. But once, when the old man was out, you know, a child is actually in, he looked at it, then he heard him come back. And when he came back, he rolled it back quickly, but he couldn't get the last page in or something, and he pushed it in. He pushed it in with his fingers so the old man shouldn't find out. And that's why it's probably wrinkled, if you notice in the beginning. Well, see again. So he was all right. Now let's see what else. Now, he took lessons from somebody who was about Creole. They, a special part that they have in the synagogue, etc. And my father was supposed to be good at that. He told us he was good. But he took lessons from somebody who was considered the best. And my father...
This is a Bible reader?
It's a... I don't think it's a Bible reading. In fact, I have a couple of records if you want to, and you can have one.
Records of him?
Before he died, he wanted to give each one in the family some remembrance of his voice. And he picked one of those.
Really?
Yeah. And you have to have the old attachment, you know, phonograph. The modern records are played on what speed?
It's a 75, a 78?
It's the old one, 78. Yeah. But that's all right.
That's okay, yeah.
All right. So I'll give you one if you want before you go.
Yeah, it's definitely.
All right. So he said he took lessons from him, and he considered himself as good as the other fellow. And he wasn't conceited, my father. He really was good. And when he used to go, when I was a kid, he'd take me to shul sometime on a Saturday. And it was a reading. He'd give one of those appropriate to the time. And when he got through, all the old timers would flock over and say, "Mr. Bloom, boy, that was marvelous, the way he read it." And so I didn't know what it's all about. I was just a kid. So the only thing I know about the shul, there were two lions on the altar there. And I was interested in what they are. So I asked them, "What are those lions here? Why do you have lions here?" So he concocted a story, which I believe. He said, "If anyone comes in at night and wants to steal anything from this synagogue, those lions become alive and they chase them out." So,
where was that? Is that
it's in Gunyan, Sam. Wait a minute. Yeah, over on the other side. How could it be on the other side? I was here.
Yeah.
Then I must have been a kid here. Let's see. How long did I believe that story?
So the synagogue was here?
Yeah, sure.
In
New York.
Where was that? Where were you living then?
Where was I living? Well, let's see how long I believed that, and I can go back. I only believe until I think 55 or something. But however, all kidding aside, so let's say I was 6, 7. See, I thought I was a smart kid. But however, you see what happens. So however, that's the story. So when I was 6 or 7, we lived on 2nd Avenue, 1621 2nd Avenue. Mm-hmm. 1621, right.
The manuscript ends before he comes to this country, so if you can think of anything that he might have said about the few years between the time he got married to, for instance, what year did he come to America?
The best I can figure, Esther was the first one. She's 2 years older than I am. She was the first one born here. You see, in those days, the father went to America, tried to make a living, and he left the rest of the family there. And then as soon as they get a job or whatever they did, then they bring the family. So my father had, I was the second one born here. My mother may have been pregnant with Esther then, I don't know. The year I was born, 93, she was born in 91. So it's around the 90s then, mm-hmm, that he came here.
So there were two others born before those?
No, you mean...
There were two girls who were born before Esther, right? Who's there?
Now let's see the scale. That's, Esther was born here and I was born here. Then there was, on the other side, Sarah and Rose and Anna, three. Three
were born
over
there.
So, and Frank must have been there too. Sure. Frank is second oldest. I think Frank comes before Anna. You probably have their ages better.
Somewhere written down.
Yeah. So, that was that. Now, let's see. Yeah, well, now, what did you want to know? What year he...
Yeah, dates.
Well, it could be. If I was born in 93, '93. Esther was born in '91, so it was before '91. I say, or 90 or 89. Doesn't he mention it in there?
No, it stops before then.
He's poor on dates. He writes his thing.
Do you remember him telling you anything about the years right around his coming to America?
What do you mean?
Do you remember him ever mentioning anything to you about...
Well, when he came to America, you probably have the story where he got the name Broom.
No, that's all... The story ends with him, with his discharge from the Army.
That's the end.
That's the end, yeah.
Now, what year was that? That could be. He was born in 1860.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have the book here right now when...
That he mentions there. And here, I have your mother unearthed this little letter that he left in some old papers I had. And he mentions there that he was born, almost like a will, he wrote this, but didn't quite mention everybody. He gave an account of some of the money he had. Where he got this and where he got that. I don't know why he wrote that out, but I have it here. I can see if I can translate it for you. So what were you asking there?
About the years just before he came to America, if he ever had said anything to you about those years.
And how did he change his name to Bloom?
Yeah.
Oh, the Bloom, he said, well, he came over on steerage like they all come. Boy, did they suffer. Coming over in that series, packed there like animals. Well, however, he came over and he's looking for his baggage and couldn't be found, so he got a hold of one of the men to take care of that. And he said, well, what's your name? Your name on? He said, yeah, my name is on, but he couldn't find it. So he had to spell his name, Treszynski, Treszynski, and all that. Tell an American name like that. He's looking for a football player or anything like that. So, however, couldn't find it for a while until they got together on the spelling. Of course, my father couldn't know English words. He could read them and all. So finally, they did find it with a lot of trouble. So he got his baggage. And he made up his mind right then and there that Treszynski won't go in America. So he might have been Treszynski. So, however, he won't go. So he decided to take the simplest name he could see around, and he looked at the various signs as he was walking along, and he said he took a monosyllabic name because that's easy. Nobody can make a mistake. He saw Bloom on a sign. That's it. So we named Bloom. Of course, you would never be named Bloom. It would be the other way. But however, here we are. So that was the name. He told me that. He did mention one thing that's quite interesting. They suffered so much over there, but so much, that it made an impact on them. That's why they want to come to America. The prejudice against them and all, how they live. I heard him as a kid. I couldn't have been more than, it's hard to tell. Well, let's say seven or eight. And he was talking to his friends there, and I was in a group, you know, not knowing what they're talking about, except one thing I'll never forget. He said he loves this country so much that he'd fight for them right now if they needed him. It impressed me, which meant that he suffered over there, how they suffered over there. Oh, my. That was so a man, I don't know how old he was then, maybe 45 or 50 to me. They don't need him for the army, but that was his feeling, he'd go. So that was that, let's see. Put that in first, we'll take up arms. All right, now let's see what else, what other years are you looking
for? Okay, well, here's something that interests me. Why is it that he didn't consider continuing on with medicine or in the capacity that he had?
Well, when he came it to may this? Be a question of money. He never said why, but I know he brought with him, he brought some fine surgical instruments that he had. He had a whole case of them. And one thing he brought, I'm sorry I didn't keep it to this day, for bloodletting, in those days, they did a lot of bloodletting. And they called these blood, what do they call them?
The Felcher?
Huh?
Is it called a Felcher?
Yeah, he was called a Felcher. And a Felcher had a higher standing, sort of a nurse. And the way he explained it was, he could do minor operation when the doctor wasn't around or couldn't be found. So he did. When he came to America, he said he evidently still had an interest in medicine, but well, how could he attempt even to go to school? He came here to make a few dollars to bring his family. That would end the whole thing. So he said, one of his customers, I guess, some man who had trouble with the legs, some whatever it was, and he undertook to heal it for the man, you see. So he did. And according to the story he tells me, it healed up. Then the man gave him a warning. Mr. Bloom, remember, in this country you can't practice without a license. I appreciate what you did for me, but don't do it for anybody else because you get into trouble. So that would be the only reason, I say, or the main reason. If he had had money, fine, because he was interested in that. And, oh, this come to this cupping business. Now, they have what they call... now, wait, what's the English term for? Used cups, they don't use them today, maybe infrequently anyway. Well, don't be sure. Infrequently, where there's a situation where you want to tap something quickly, you get it. In those days, it was almost a must. So the way they did it, I suppose today too, they take a cup, any cup, heat it, get the air out, and put it right over the spot. And then as it cools off, it sucks the blood out, you see. But that isn't fast enough in such a situation where you really want to deplete an area for a certain amount of blood. So they had what they call, well, this is a Jewish word, gehakte bunkus. Gehakte means chucked, and the bunkus is the cup itself. And the way they did that, he had a little, well, what do I call it, an instrument, I guess, about 2 inches cube, two by two, and there was a trigger on the top. And as you pulled the trigger, there were 4 or 5 sharp blades coming out, just like razor blades. And if you wanted the blood fast, before, and no anesthetic, of course, so while you have the cup ready to draw the blood, the first thing you do, right over the area where you wanted it, you put it down flat and pull that trigger, and that made 4 or 5 incisions, and then put the cup on. Boy, you got blood out. And I kept that around, but I was afraid. I was afraid the children might cut a finger off. So I could have, well, never mind what we could have. I decided I better get rid of that. He also had some instruments, which, scalpels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But those disappeared in time. Nothing left of that here. So, that was that. Now, let's see, what else? Go ahead, you lead them. Maybe I can get
Do you remember anything about your mother, Dora, anything interesting?
Well, from her background?
Yeah.
No,
did she ever
no.
tell you anything about her parents?
Did who?
Did your mother ever tell you anything about her parents?
No.
She didn't talk about them?
No. No, she came from home. They did sewing there, seamstress. And my mother was a good seamstress, as far as I know. But that's about all. Nothing. Never spoke of her life. Mm-hmm. So I know nothing really of her life.
What about in America?
Yeah.
What did she do? Well.
Well,
I mean, basically,
outside of raising,
did she work in a store with your father also, or?
Well, she wasn't necessarily in the store. The store was a delicatessen store,
right,
and required the services of men. You might say, my brother Frank did too. Mm-hmm. So, at one time, whether things were a little tough, or they decided to try to make a little money. My mother sort of advertised it in the store that she'll make dinners, quick dinners, fried this or fried that, eggs and whatever you can do quickly, and soup. So I remember Now, let's see, then that would bring me back to about 7 or 8. I think it's on 2nd Avenue. However, two young ladies came in, finely dressed as far as I was concerned, oh boy, and they sat down and they ordered something. And they must have seen the situation, some poorer people trying to make a few. So they left a quarter tip each. Wow, quarter tip in those days, a nickel was or a dime. So after they got through, oh boy, talk about that. They certainly must have enjoyed it. So that was our only venture into business. My father, though, on the other hand, oh boy, you named the business, he was in it.
Such as.
Now, he started with the delicatessen business. Why, I couldn't tell you. Maybe he's acquainted with her over there in some way or other. So, I remember him as a kid. The first delicatessen I remember was on 2nd Avenue, 1621 2nd Avenue. The building is still there, 1621. I was a kid. That's it. My only interest in the store was to get a good piece of bologna or something, and he was very generous with that. He never refused. So there he was doing all right until the time when he needed a extra money. He was looking for a farm, and he went out to Staten Island, way out the Richmond Valley. The place is still there. It's the other end of Richmond Valley, and he used to take me for rides. I remember the ride, going on the elevator and getting off on the battery there and taking the ferry. And I never remember how we got to, they must have had the railroad. They had some sort of, they had no buses in those days. May have been trolley cars or they had a train. So we used to go out there and finally he made, it took more time because he spent the whole summer there. And mosquitoes, oh God, how people can stand those things when you think of it. That was part of your life, mosquitoes. Well, so however, then what he did, he had chickens and for the eggs. And he'd bring them to America to try to sell them in his store, I guess. And my brother Frank was old enough, he used to help him.
He brought them with him on the boat?
Well, they went out there, and then they'd have to bring it back. He had the chickens out there in Long Island, in Staten Island, and they would lay eggs. Mm-hmm. So the purpose was to bring the eggs to his store and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to take me for a ride out there, and then we spent a longer time there once. In fact, there, I remember, he and Frank buried one of the children who had died there. Now, it meant nothing to me. I was a child then, a very young child. And why? Well, they had an undertaker there, I suppose. So, now, which child that was, I wouldn't know. How would that fit in? I was alive, Esther was alive. Izzy, I don't remember, having been out there. Izzy, I don't remember. So it couldn't have been one between me and Izzy. But I do remember something about that burying with some undertaker and that child.
How old was it? Was it a baby?
Who?
The baby, was it a baby that had died?
Yeah. Young baby. Now, the one that did die later on that we know about is the one before Aaron. And her name was Ray, and she evidently had some throat disease because they took her out on the island here, one of the islands, and in the hospital there. And I used to call up every once in a while.
How old were you then?
Very young, but old enough to use a telephone because we had no telephone at home. If we didn't have a telephone at home, then why don't we use a store telephone? I don't know. Maybe to more people here, whatever it was, he'd give me the nickel and I'd go into a phone booth and call up. When I called up a hospital, I, you know, a little scared to talk to somebody. But I'd ask, how is so-and-so? And they probably gave the same answer. They'd give me, well, okay or not okay, or whatever medical terms they use. So that's all. She died there. I don't know whether she died in the hospital or out, probably, I don't remember. And now, wait a minute. I don't remember the funeral in any way. No, that couldn't have been the one that was buried there. I don't know. So what happened? So that was one before Aaron. And so Aaron was born 10 years younger than I am. He was born in 1903, so that one must have been born shortly before that, 1901. And they also had twins. I remember as a kid, today you have twins, you send them to the hospital, they give them good care, and a chance of pulling them through. All I remember, twins, red, the whole body was red. I saw them in a clothes basket. They put the two twins there, doing nothing. What the doctor did, what could he do?
Were they were stillborn or?
No, they were live kids. Live.
They didn't live though.
Huh?
They didn't live.
No, they didn't live. And then what happened to them, I don't know. No, I'm just trying to think, could those have been the ones that were buried? No. I know there was a burial of some kind there. Huh. So that was the twins there. Very red. Are they usually that color, very red? Yeah. So that was that.
Were they born early?
What's that?
Were they born early? Too early?
You think you knew?
Never knew.
The story I told you, you don't know anything. Those days, we didn't know, born too early, too late. They didn't talk to us about that. Well, you know the episode, the story that... he wouldn't mention it. Now, this is all in America. He doesn't mention anything. But about Aaron. Now, I was 10 years old when Aaron was born, because it's almost 10 years. I didn't have a good recollection right now. No, I didn't know how children are born. Didn't know. We sort of, kids would talk to each other. Oh, one would say from heaven, one would bring them on the truck. We were absolutely green. You couldn't imagine that. Today the kids can teach us a thing or two. However, so Dr. Schutt took care of him, horse and carriage prisons, at home. And finally delivered and all right, and the doctor made his visits and then wanted to go for his pay. So that was in 1621, Second Avenue, and the delicatessen went to a certain part of the store, and then there was a partition, a wooden partition, I think, where you could keep all your stuff there. So the moment this Dr. Schutt came in to talk to him about his fee, I was told to get in the back there. So I sneaked in the back, but kids have big ears, they say. So I want to see what's going on here anyway. So the conversation went something like this. Dr. Schutt says to the old man, well, it'll be $25 this time. My father says, $25? Oh, no. Too much. He said, well, I had a hard time and this and whatever. Nothing doing. They couldn't get together on the fee. So finally my father told him, look, I never paid more than $15 for any child, and that's the price I can afford to pay. So I know what I was paid, what they paid for me. $15 with me. I was born with a midwife, a hay bomber, so-called, and the price may have been less. It was only worth $10. Jeez, imagine that. So that's it. So that was the story. What led to that? I told you the story of his Aaron. Yeah. Now let's see. What else? Give me a few.
All right. How about the community and the? Do you remember anything particular about your father's dealings with the community? I mean, you mentioned before about how he was Well, he says in the book that he was what they called a Bible reader.
Yeah, I'll give you one. About three, well, that's the nearest thing to getting the Hebrew ways.
But did, and he, apparently he must have done that here to a certain extent.
Oh, sure.
What else did he do?
Well, now here. Now, what happened was this. Now, for instance, this store, I'm showing you, he went out in the egg business, out and way out there, and took up his time, but he found a way of making a few dollars. Then he also had a store on the other side. Rents were evidently cheap. 1632, which is an even number on the other side, of the same block. Because he felt somebody's coming in, so he wanted to protect himself, and he thought another delicatessen would come in. That would be tough. So he rented it, had a store there. I don't remember too much of that store because the main headquarters...
Was it a delicatessen?
Yeah, 1621. So whether Frank took care of that, I don't know. I worked later on in the Lenox Avenue store at 416. I used to work there. Even when I went to college there, I worked in the store. Used to deliver orders in the morning. The orders themselves were quite an event. Well, I don't want to mix up the thing. You'd have orders to take out. No bottle milk, nothing like that. But you'd get a 40-quart milk can. The milk can today is worth more than contents of that. So, however, you'd have to get up early in the morning to get the orders ready. And what my job was to unfreeze the cream. There was no homogenized milk. And the man would leave the can in the morning in the wintry days. That cream would rise and freeze on top of the can so you couldn't get at the milk. So I had a nice pick and chop until I could mix that with the milk, but the cream would rise anyway. So the ones who were lucky enough to get the big dipper with a quarter milk probably got half cream. Those days, cream was valuable. Today, the women don't want cream. So that was my job. And what the orders consisted of, they tell us that during the day, all we knew that Mr. So-and-so on this street got six rolls and a quarter milk. The other one, a few buns with whatever they had, and the milk. So he had a lot of milk cans, like you've probably seen in the movies, mm-hmm. Milk cans. And my job was to quart, quart and a half, et cetera, et cetera, after the milk was unfrozen a bit. And then to deliver it, they all had dumbwaiters. You've seen them probably in the... what dumbwaiters, and with push buttons, and Mr. Stepinski, oh, the order, you pull it up, get good muscle, where are they? So we pull them up, and then she take us there, and rinse the can, and down, then you go to the next house, etc. So this, that was the orders that we took out in the morning. Then coming back, we'd have to, wash the cans because to get them ready for the tomorrow. So, however, that was the job. So, what brought that on?
You're talking about the community and...
Oh, well, that was one thing. That was the orders that I remember, and that was my job. And as we got a little, I used to tend store also. I used to sell at the counter and cut to this day. I mean, you can't lose it. And cut thin slices, etc. Many people find hard. So, let's see, you know, must be a long time now, but quite a number of years, I'd say, that I helped in the store. All right, but that's my story, but we want something on my father. All right, it's part of it.
All
anyway.
Right, no, I mean,
and you see, they worked hard. We'd get up, my father and I, because we both go in the same time, get up about, say, 4 or 5 o'clock. You had to get there and get the orders ready and get the thing going. And but a kid like myself then, he doesn't want to go to bed at night when he tells you 8, 9 o'clock. You want to see what's going on, nightlife. So what my father used to do for his own enjoyment, he had a few, am I too far
away? No, it's fine.
Oh, he had a few friends who'd come and play pinochle. That was the game. In fact, my father once said, any man who can't play pinochle isn't a man. I mean, that's the way he felt about pinochle. So they used to play pinochle, nickel game. And that was about even. But once they got a customer who heard that they play, and this fella had money, he was the, I think, the president of the domestic sewing machine company, Big Shot, in a way. And he heard, he had plenty of money, comparatively speaking, because I overheard him on the telephone. He was giving bets, putting bets down in parlays and all that. That's why I learned my, the nomenclature for the racing. Put him on the nose, first, second, third. So, however, so he heard the games and he used to come in. So what happened in pinochle, you have to be careful because you overbid your hand, you have to pay three customers. But he didn't give a damn, this fellow. To him, money meant nothing. So they say, you're acquainted with pinochle at all? Well, it doesn't make any difference. They say 300, one would say 310, 320, one would say 350, which was usually a good high amount to bid. He'd say 400, so he didn't care if he lost. So he prayed for a long time, and they all made a living off the guy. Absolutely made a living.
Wow.
So
when was this around?
Now that much, well, I used to tend store and take orders. Gee, let me see. We had a store in the Bronx, and then we came from the Bronx. I was about 10. Now wait a minute. From the Bronx, I think we went to Lenox Avenue. Lenox Avenue. And from Lenox Avenue, I went to City College. In fact, I used to walk there. So I got into City College in 1911. But we had that store for a longer time. So let's see now. 1908, 19. I got out of school in 1907. That's right, that made me 14 years old. And then from there I went to, is that right, the age right?
You got out of?
Out of the grade school.
Grade school.
I was 14 then. Then.
You went to high school? Or?
Yes. Then we went to high school. That would be the age, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it?
How about?
Yeah, well, it was City College.
Mm-hmm. You went to City College in
1911, that's right. So, 1911.
And then your class of 1914 at NYU? Is
of course,
right?
I left that. I only stayed there 1 year. Townsend Harris Hall was the name for the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there a year, but I think the whole thing, only select students could go to Townsend Harris Hall because they got the best, what they thought was the best.
So you graduated from
I graduated high in, go ahead, I didn't.
And you graduated from high school in 1911?
Must have been. Now, is that right? 1911, no, that's too much. 1911, and as I...
Well, you know what year you graduated from dental school?
1914.
NYU Dental School, 1914.
I didn't go to the college, I didn't...
How long was dental school? How many years?
I think it was 3 years.
Okay, so...
So 1914, I probably got 11.
So you went to dental school in 1911?
Now let's see. When I got out of school, I was 14, right?
Out of
grade? I mean, the grade school.
Right.
14. Then I went to City College, 14. Is that right? To high school? What time?
How long? Is City College, did you went to high school before City College, right?
Now wait a minute. Let's get the ages right. 1907, I graduated.
1911, you graduated from high school?
That's right.
And then you went?
Then I must have gone to City College.
How long did you go to City College for?
For about a year. because that was a special class. If you went to City College through Towson Harris Hall, you saved a year. That was considered your first year of college. But then, whatever reason...
So you went to City College for 1 year, and then you went to NYU Dental School?
That's right.
Okay.
So that accounts for the extra difference.